Hello, my name is Tucker Johnson, and I am your host today as we experience NIMSY Live, where we talk about the latest and greatest in translation, localization, internationalization, culturalization, and all that fun stuff global companies need to delight their international customers. On this program, we invite guests who like to have fun and have some value to add for our audience of globalization professionals. I'm always eager to provide a platform to those with a good story or a good data set. So, let us know if there are any topics you'd like covered or guests we should reach out to for future episodes. If you haven't already done so, make sure that you are following NIMSY Insights or subscribe to NIMSY Insights. We're coming to you live on X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course YouTube, where all of our old NIMSY Live episodes are archived. You can go back and check them all out. So I think we're up to like 130 episodes now. So go back and check those out at your convenience. Before we get started today, I just want to give a quick plug, quick shout out to our friends over at Multilingual Magazine. If you haven't heard of Multilingual Magazine, now you have. It's for the last like 20 years, it's been such a great resource for our industry here. They have a monthly print magazine that goes out every month. You can subscribe to that and get it directly to your mailbox. They also have daily localization news. They have podcasts. All sorts of valuable information and resources over there at multilingual.com. If you are in the localization industry or if you care about global businesses and international expansion, you should definitely owe it to yourself to go check that out. So, getting into today's topic, joining me today is Luciano Arruda, Director of Globalization Programs at Automation Anywhere. Though today, we're kind of just talking to you in your capacity as an industry expert. You have a lot of experience. I'm going to let you go over that. You've been around the block a little bit. You can tell us a little bit about Automation Anywhere, but we're going to be talking a lot about, you guessed it, AI, the hot topic right now. Luciano has worked at some of the most iconic names in tech, Adobe, Google, Uber. Now he's leading the charge on how we apply automation and AI to streamline globalization workflows. We're going to be talking real-world strategies to optimize international operations, enhance multilingual support, and actually make these big ideas work at scale. Whether you're running a localization team or looking to expand your products across borders, this conversation is going to contain insights you don't want to miss. Luciano also brings a unique background that blends technical depth with business savvy, from overseeing international sales portfolios to co-developing programs that support refugee mobility through digital upskilling. It's quite the resume you've got, Luciano. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the introduction. I'm impressed. I don't see myself as being that knowledgeable.
I don't, isn't that kind of humbling to see yourself in print sometimes? You're like, dang, that's right. I did all of that?
Yeah. I think we're all kind of part of a journey that, you know, we're all learning every day. And as you know, technology is changing and you know, there's a lot of new things that happen all the time. So while we may have a rich background, we're always learning. So I'm glad to be part of this journey. I also wanted to thank you for providing the space for me to join this meeting and talk to your audience. Also to those who, you know, are curious or have questions and anybody else who view the video later. So thanks to your team behind the scenes there that, you know, put this together. I know it's not simple.
Well, yeah, thank you. The pleasure is all mine, of course, because I get to have an interesting conversation about AI agentic solutions. You're going to tell us what the heck that means. It's something that I've heard many, many times. I've had some conversations about it, but everybody's still kind of learning about all of the recent advancements, and it can be intimidating because there's so much new information out there right now and so many new skills to develop and technologies to learn about. But at the same time, it can be really encouraging because to a certain extent, most of us are kind of starting off at the same level as we enter into this new AI-driven world. So tell us a little bit about what do we mean by exploring globalization agentic solutions, automation, and Gen AI. Walk us through that.
Sure. I think, you know, one of the interesting things that it's happening right now is in the past 2 years, we've been playing with AI. Everybody kind of knows what AI does or could do. And we've been playing with concepts, we've been playing with ideas, and then running some experiments. But I think over the last 2 years, we have been transitioning from just straightforward applications as to, you know, can you ask AI to do this or that, to tying things up and actually building infrastructure to push these solutions into production. And then realizing that there's ways that you can leverage skills, AI skills, in order to accomplish bigger tasks. So we're kind of going from a regular just, you know, solve one problem to solve many problems or more complex problems. So the agentic solutions, they come in on that level. And we're like not just starting to talk about agentic solutions, we're starting to talk about process orchestration across agents and agentic solution platforms. So this is starting to become a reality within the industry. And I can give you some examples. So
yeah,
let's say, you know, it's a lot easier if you just kind of put something on paper. So let's say that you have your engineering team coding, creating global ready content. And, you know, maybe in the past, you would have some code analysis and you would say, hey, you hard coded this date format, this date's system date. And now, you know, we want to make sure the product's global ready, so you have to fix this. So maybe you can have an automation that looks at the code, does the analysis, and then sends you know, flags to the developer. You can't check in your code because it's not passing the global ready, you know, analysis. Well, that's one way of doing it. The other way is you can use an agent with AI, and I'll define what an agent means so that's a little easier for people to play around these concepts. Mm-hmm. But maybe you can have an agent that looks at the code and actually uses some data, some enterprise data, to understand the best practices and guidelines on how to address a problem that you found. And it can actually heal. It can fix the code. It can create unit testing. It can create a JIRA ticket and assign it to the QA responsible for the feature. Hmm. And it can notify the QA that, you know, I just fixed this in the code. And the code was checked in, and now it needs to be checked by QA. So as opposed to just scanning the code and giving you a report that maybe is not as actionable, it can actually do things that are connected to multiple systems. So an agentic solution usually comes together when you have an LLM, right, mm-hmm. an element, when you have data that allows it to not hallucinate. So when you feed the LLM with RAG, right, or with enterprise data, and you use some prompt engineering to train it, it kind of, you know, it becomes a skill, becomes an AI skill. So yeah. It specializes into some areas. And so, when you combine that with governance, then now you have an agentic model that you can use.
Let's back up. Let's slow it down just a little bit.
You went a little too fast.
No. Like, I'm right there with you. But just for accessibility purposes, I want everyone to feel included in this conversation. Talk to me. You said hallucinate. What does that mean? And how do we prevent that from happening by using the data, right? Just to back it up a little bit.
Yeah. So a hallucination would be when the LLM is trying to give you an answer and it may not be correct. And it might switch information on you because it's trying to deliver the right answer without knowing what the answer is. So I look at LLM or AI as a probability box. It's always going to try to give you the best possible answer. And then it learns by validating that with millions of other entries, and then it tries to get it right again and again and again. But every once in a while, you hallucinate. So I'll give you an example of a hallucination. I think Yelp, if I'm not mistaken, or one of those platforms that evaluates products, maybe had someone say that a dress that was available in a store was beautiful. And this was translated with AI with this hallucination that the dress was perfect for a wedding. And the dress was not meant to be, you know, used in a wedding. So AI can introduce new meaning or introduce new sentences to
it
a translation.
It can lie.
Yeah,
essentially.
It's just trying to get it right.
You're being diplomatic, like, because it's not as smart as it sounds sometimes.
That's right, exactly.
It can be smart 95% of the time, and it can get the right answer, but 5% of the time, if it doesn't know, it's just going to give you a bullshit answer.
Exactly.
And yeah. it's not going to tell you that it's a bullshit answer. And that's what makes it dangerous. And that's what requires that human in the loop. And you mentioned, like, in the example that you were giving, where it was checking the code, or, you know, checking the code, making an update, checking it back in, creating a JIRA ticket, and sending it for QA. That QA step is really important. Because,
right.
and I am by no means an engineer, software developer, or anything, but even I have experience with this because I was helping my son with a science project, and he was building this robot, and we had to program it with the code, and it wasn't working, and I thought, well, let's just run it through ChatGPT, right? Spit out code, new code, uploaded it to the board, and it was working perfectly, right? That one didn't require a human to check it. But if you're dealing with higher risk than just a local, you know, third grade STEM science fair, you definitely want a human looking at it.
Yes. So, I mean, I think that, you know, again, like on a strict AI task automation, you want to have the human in the loop. On an agentic solution, you want to have a human decisioning element on it. So the human in the loop might be, you know, within the globalization industry, if you're more strictly talking about localization, it might be someone who checks to see if the translation is correct. Mm. And a human decisioning would be someone who looks at the content that was translated and decides, you know, within the orchestration of processes, how can we use this content and leverage this information to increase certain engagement within a country or a language or a region. So you have also these different elements that are showing up. I think it was on your NIMSY report. I think I saw this maybe a month ago, where there are new roles that are being formed or created with all of this change in technology, right? With this agentic solutions or AI integrations. One of them is the architect. Right.
Yep.
We have the LangOps concept. Mm. And, you know, so we have all these new functions, and the human in the loop is one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so back up just a little bit, and forgive me. I'm a little slow. I'm a little dense. Mm-hmm. We have very smart. I'm talking to a very smart person. We have very smart people in the chat. I see Yulia, my colleague. Hi, Yulia. She's the one that probably wrote that report you're referencing. But let's really dumb it down. What makes a solution an agentic solution? What is an agent at its base level? And I've talked about this a little bit before, but I just want to make sure we're really grasping the concept.
Yeah. So an agent is when you combine an AI skill with an action, then you have an agent. An agent is capable of delivering or, you know, following up, using information to take action. So that's an agent. That's the easiest explanation.
Perfect.
And an AI skill is the combination of an LLM with training data and some prompt engineering to calibrate it.
Perfect.
So that's an AI skill.
Perfect. So the agents are the ones that are going to be taking our jobs.
Well, that's an excellent point, because, you know, here's one thing. And I think, you know, Yulia or whoever wrote that, the report you mentioned, or from NIMSY, the jobs are just changing. I think there's a transformation that's going on. So one thing you can say is, like, Google produces translation with machine translation. They have Gemini, but they have a localization team that's very busy. OpenAI has a localization team. So the you know, there's still the functions are still there. They're just maybe working on different capacity.
That's something we point out to people all the time, because we get the question here at NIMSY Insights, like, is our industry going away? Am I going to lose my job? And had the same conversation 10, 20 years ago when machine translation was coming out and getting better. And people say, well, why can't I just Google translate everything? And
right.
We would say, well, Google has a localization director. Now, OpenAI has hired a localization director. Right. If they could do everything using their own technology, they would. But there's still very much going to be a need for localization.
Yeah. In this industry, like you guys said, it's growing 5%, 6% a year. We have like a $72 billion annual revenue going on. And then we expect more content and more business in the next few years. And then just different industries are moving at different speed. But, you know, we continue to work.
We persevere. And one thing that's useful to point out is we're an industry that Localization is an industry that depends upon inputs. We don't create anything. We translate we transform words into words in other languages. We transform products into localized products in other languages, right? And one thing that I don't feel gets enough attention is that with the advancements happening with large language models and generative AI, the cost of creating source content is going down. The ability of teams to create source content is going down, which means there's going to be even more content for us to be able to localize, right? So it's not just what can AI do to help us translate, it's how is AI changing the inputs to our industry?
I completely agree. So, this is kind of a confirmation that, technology has been and will continue to be deflationary, like the cost of delivering content is going down. However, the complexity increases, and this is why I think LSPs and technology providers are going to be part of this integration to accelerate the delivery of content across multiple languages. I also wanted to say that this growth in content is really a possibility. We're going to talk about a few examples of how to use AI to deal with scalable programs, but the growth is real. And then resource allocation is something that will probably play a role in the future. I would say that today, we have these things impacting the industry, right? AI and all this shifting in technology, but we also have this shift in global policies that I think is worth mentioning, that the global economy is sort of reorging, right? You have the BRICS countries that might be doing business among each other more often, mm-hmm. and maybe a shift from English to other languages as being source language. So we always think about the source language and the target language. These things can move around a little bit depending on global alliances. And we are witnessing, some dramatic changes like the one that we saw in the government in the U.S., no longer translating, right? Reducing, cutting some translation. However, other countries may be increasing their translations with different language sets, so yep. and different services.
Yep. Yeah. No. I mean, my take on it is demand is not decreasing, but it's changing. Meaning, right. It's the overall demand for translation localization is going to continue to go up. It's not going to peak. It's not going to jump, but it's going to stay level, or it's going to continue to go up. But where that demand is coming from and what's driving that demand, I think, is going to be changing.
That's right. Yeah.
It's really quick. I'm watching the comments here. We got an active chat going on here. Good to see everybody. I already shouted out Yulia. We got Sriram, Michael. Good to see you. Nikoli from South Africa. Alexandra says, interesting talk and good to see you, Luciano. I am just working on localizing agentic solutions for a Dutch model.
Awesome.
And interesting talking, and that's a repeat here.
If it ain't Dutch, it ain't much. So I'm sure Alexander, she's going to be doing great.
Preaching to the choir there. I wanted to bring up here, just because I'm curious, I was checking it out before the podcast here, the Automation Anywhere, the organization that you're currently working on. Tell me a little bit about your journey. What brought you there? And what are you doing over there?
Oh, sure.
And I'll bring it up on screen here.
Sure. Yeah. So Automation Anywhere, it's an interesting company because, it relies on technology to enable people to be more productive. So, it's an amazing opportunity that I saw because I've always been working somewhere between low ops and I've had my hands into QA in the past. I've been a manager, I've done kind of a little bit of everything, but coming to Automation Anywhere, I saw the opportunity to combine this technology background with solutioning, right? So the globalization, like business aspect, it's an area that I wanted to contribute more. And coming to work at Automation Anywhere helped me to, build programs that are addressing initially my stakeholders. So I have, I have the typical stakeholders that you would have, like in product, in marketing, legal, all the different verticals, but I can also create solutions that are available to our clients. So if something works within Automation Anywhere, then why not, you know, make this available to our 5,000 enterprise customers? And we're starting to kind of build these solutions. And this is kind of, you know, it's extremely rewarding for me to be able to explore those venues.
Yeah, and you mentioned stakeholders. Who are the stakeholders in your, not just at Automation Anywhere, but in your experience in the world, in the industry? Who stands to benefit most from AI solutions?
Oh, my God. You know, I think AI solutions are just trickling everywhere. Like, I would say that, like, most organizations today are adopting AI in some way, right? One way or another. Most executives are going to rank Gen AI as being like the top three types of technology that are going to move them into the future. And I think I'm looking at it as statistics here. 89% of executives admit that AI will significantly change the way their company create, deliver, or capture value. So this applies to the airline industry, to the automobile industry, right? This applies to the energy sector, to the health and pharmaceuticals. This applies to the marketing and retail. Every industry can use AI to, you know, enhance the customer experience that they have, to save effort, you know, from a process that maybe takes 12 days to complete and now maybe can be done in 3 days or 3 hours. So depending how you use AI, you can achieve things that you couldn't before. And we can go over examples, but AI is something that people on my level are really aware that they need to use. People above me know that they need to use. All my vendors come to me and say, hey, we have a new AI solution that is going to save 50%, 70% effort. You know, it's going to get things done faster. It's coming from all directions. Yeah. So I don't think it's something that you can avoid. You know, you can embrace it. I think your original question was, who is using AI in the localization industry, in the internationalization industry, globalization? Everybody's looking at it, I think. And it doesn't matter what vertical you are in. If you're a lawyer, a doctor, you know, like, everybody's aware of it. I went to my dentist the other day, and they're using AI to analyze the x-ray pictures and, you know, everything else. So
Well, and I think people are starting to really embrace it nowadays, but it's been a journey over the last couple of years, really. Like, yes, I know large language models have been around for a while. AI solutions have been around for a while, but I really attribute, like, the birth of AI to when ChatGPT came on the scene. Why? Yeah. Because it made it publicly accessible. And it made it publicized, you know, it was out there, people were talking about it, and it was publicly accessible. Whereas before, AI, large language models, was kind of something in the realm of the MIT nerds, and you needed to hire someone for a ridiculous salary to implement it at your company. Nowadays, it's becoming much more accessible, and people are starting to adopt it, but there's still been, before we go into the accessibility, because I wanted to talk about, like, this Agent Studio and how we can make AI even more accessible. But before we go into that, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, this fear that we've seen. I see it going down, but there's been kind of a fear of adopting AI, much like there was a fear of adopting machine translation for a long time. Security reasons, confidentiality reasons, stuff like that. Is that fear justified? And what's being done to address that fear in our industry?
Well, education, evangelism, you know, stakeholder management, those are important things. But I completely agree with you that, you know, there is a, you know, it's kind of shocking for most businesses to say, I'm gonna start to use, you know, adopt AI, because there, you know, this impacts your strategy and your vision. This impacts how maybe you deliver products and services to your clients, because, you know, their client experience might be slightly different. There's a lot of governance and risk management that needs to be put in place. Data leaks, right? Who has access to certain types of information, that, you know, all of the prompt engineering and all of the enterprise data, right? It needs to be handled with care. There's also a different level of skills and talent that needs to be onboarded, or, you know, there's calibration of existing knowledge in-house to the technology stack. How do you connect with data in the cloud? You know, do you have the ability to develop a RAG, you know, approach? or do you, you know, how do you work across multiple verticals, or you stay within one vertical first? So how do you measure success? How do you measure progress? So all of this is going to change the way, you know, a corporation is going to analyze and deploy. And I think one of the outcomes of the NIMSI, you know, report was that different companies have been working on this in different stages and different levels, and they're all moving at different speeds. So this is kind of, you know, what's fantastic is that everybody can experience this and the flavors in different ways. But eventually, it's not easy. Like you said, it is challenging. It is kind of scary because it changes the way infrastructure is put together. You know, it changes the rules of the game. How do you measure success? So yeah, it's big, and it's not going to happen overnight. But it's right. You know, it's we're going through it.
Well, it's big, and it's something that I feel. So in the localization industry, I've always, you know, for the last 20 years dealing with different clients, I noticed there was a big difference between working with a client that's been around for 50, heck, 100 years, you know, an old client, and a new startup client. Because from a localization perspective, working with those old clients was sometimes a lot more challenging. Even though they were technically more mature, they were larger, they had bigger budget, it was more challenging because you had to take a machete to all of their old legacy systems. Their whole platform, their whole process infrastructure, way that they did everything, their culture was built upon these old systems. And you can't just completely demolish a system and replace it with something new. You have to make incremental changes. Whereas startup companies didn't have those old systems. So you could implement today the best practices, today's best practices, today's best technologies, and remain flexible. And I kind of see that with companies now looking to adopt AI. Like, I foresee in the next 10 years, we're going to see startups that don't even exist yet, but they're going to be the next big companies in the next decade. They're going to have systems built from the ground up, leveraging this new technology, whereas older companies are going to struggle to keep up with that because they're stuck trying to make these incremental changes and not able to completely uproot their processes and systems, right? And so where I'm going with this is, how do I, as a company that already has systems, already has a technology infrastructure ecosystem going on, I've built it over the last 10 years, I am somewhat happy with it, how do I start implementing AI solutions today without completely pulling everything up by its roots?
Yeah, no. You know, I would say that you have to have alignment with the executive team, with the vision of the company, and you have to have alignment with other departments, because you're not going to do this trying to just be a hero on your own as an island. You know, let's say, well, you know, I'm gonna implement some automation with AI solutions across my, you know, my team. Great, but where are you going to store the automations? How are you collecting data for the automations? How do you know it's safe for your corporation that there's no data leaks? How do you manage access? So this is usually bigger than just your department. So other departments are also automating and are also creating agentic solutions. How are these solutions going to talk to each other in the future? So you don't want to create a situation where you're competing with initiatives that other teams have. You're competing for resources. When, you know, they look at you as a cost center and not, you know, a revenue creation type solution. So this is not done alone. So I would have to say that you want to look at your corporations like OKRs. You want to align with what are the top three most important things that the executive team has to deliver on, and you want to be able to fit in your initiative within that narrative. You want to be able to support growth of your company and have the endorsement of your executive team, whoever is above you. You need to be very aware of, you know, what are those goals and how are you going to fit your AI solution, and then use the language instead of saying, well, you know, if I use AI, I'm going to save you, you know, $10,000 at the end of the month, as opposed to, you know, we're going to increase customer satisfaction by 40%, and I'll be able to demonstrate this with, you know, some kind of a survey. Or I'm going to reduce the amount of time it takes to deliver translations to the market by 70%, because we're going to automate and we're going to use AI to streamline content, you know, a lot faster to market. I'll give you an example, you know, if you want. So marketing team here, always want to know what's new, right? Marketing team wants to be able to communicate to the market, engage with future clients, and knowing what's new, it's also helpful because, you know, it's always interesting to see what's the latest. And you also want to know what is most relevant to the market, because what people care about is what they're going to read. You can throw anything, you know, them, and they'll just ignore. So one of the challenges we had was that we didn't have a way to tell each of the regional marketing managers what page was updated on our website and when and for which language, because all of the updates are done dynamically. And so if I'm updating 40 pages a week across multiple languages, how do the teams know which page was updated? So we were running into situations where they would navigate through our website and they would find out, oh, I have a new use case in French. I can talk about it, right? So that's something new that would be interesting to some of my clients. So that's kind of the problem. Like, how do you transfer this information about what's the latest available on the site? And so we put some automation in place to create reports every time pages are updated on our site. We have an email that goes out to a distribution list, and I created a distribution list for every country that we have. So anyone in country can say, yeah, I'm in support, I'm in marketing, I'm in sales, I'm in, you know, working this different legal team or whatever, and I want to know what's new on the website. So they put their name on a distribution list, and once a week they receive notification of these are the pages that were modified, updated on the site. But then I take that data and I feed it to an agent, right? Mm-hmm. So I have an agent that gets this data. This is my enterprise data. And it has a skill. It has a skill to go read these pages and come up with summaries and come up with information about what's in these pages that's so interesting, right? And then I have some prompt engineering that I could calibrate the experience of my marketing manager. And so now when my marketing manager wants to know what's new, they go to the agent and say, hey, write me a blog about what's new on the website as of last week. Or they can say, you know what, I have some customers who want to know about process orchestration and they don't know much about it. And I want to know in Portuguese what's available about it on my website. So the agent has the skills, has the data, he has the training. It will go and fetch the information and say, okay, we updated 17 pages in Portuguese last week. And here's the content of each page. And it says, make it sound interesting, create some insights. And give me some links and tell me a little bit more about, you know, like what would be relevant for my market to know. And so the agent will create a newsletter, right? Or he will create a blog.
Yeah.
But when you create a blog, you need to have a skill. That's a blog you want to create. So maybe you want to go into each page and you want to know what are the key terms out of each page, because we want to, you know, promote SEO. So when I do a post, a blog, I want to use the key terms. I want to make sure that I talk about this content using the key terms that are on the page, because that will further promote, right, the insights on this. So I'm sort of giving you an example of something that, you know, we're deploying. It's going to be in production, and it's something that it will help our marketing team to be quite effective in the market. And you can see that we're not translating from English to the target language. We're looking at the pages that were translated most recently and creating content directly on the language that was created, following the standards that we use with our vendors who follow style guides, glossary terms, and are using the best practices to deliver that content, you know, for our pages. So I'm piggybacking on existing content, right? And applying it to a workflow.
Yeah. And in this example that you give, like what stands out to me is like, this isn't something, this is a great value that's being added because you're able to get those insights and get that data, but it's not something that's necessarily taking away from somebody else's job, right? It's not, nor is it something that would really make any sense to hire a new person to do, because it's like, yeah, it's interesting data, it's valuable data, it's interesting insights, but for the amount of time and resources it would take an actual human being to gather all of that data and create those reports that you're talking about and iterate at the speed that you're asking it to iterate, it's just not feasible, right?
So No, because, I mean, that's the scalability part, right?
Right.
So we're not replacing anybody, right?
Right.
And my marketing manager is not threatened by this. It's actually appreciating it, because now you can be delivering more meaningful information, right?
Yeah.
To the market. So it is not, definitely, I agree with you. It's not replacing anyone. It's just getting the job done faster in a, you know, in a more productive way. So then, you know, that's for like what's new, right? And then the also what's relevant. So I can add more data to my system and I can use my analytics, right? So I can feed analytics to my agent and I can say, what are the top, you know, most viewed pages or pages with the most engagement in France or in Germany? And then out of those pages, let's create a social media post, because if people are looking at that on my website, then it's probably interesting. So let's create a social media post and let's push it out. So no one is being replaced. There's no job replacement. There's just better customer experience for our teams. And so that's an example of leveraging existing data. We're not reducing translation. You know.
And I love that you can go in and ask it. You can say, what's the most popular pages in France on our website, right? It's like, well, you know, I could do that before. I could go check Google Analytics and get that information myself. Like, what's the big deal? And to me, the big deal is the speed at which you can do it. You don't have to comb through all of the data to look for insights. You can just ask it direct questions and it comes back to you with that information. And secondly, it's that follow-up. It's the, okay, so these are the most popular pages. And you can say, what do these pages have in common? Right? Like, why are these the most popular pages? What are they talking about? What are the keywords? Create me some social media posts to help promote this. And that's where it comes in.
Yep. Yeah. So that's an example. Another example, just because you said it's not replacing anybody's job. You know, we have this automation. It's actually less of an agent. It is a co-pilot solution where we allow teams that don't have any funding for localization to get some machine translation available. So today, you know, I have folks who work in the tax division of my company, right? And they receive a spreadsheet in Japanese and it's about tax. And they're in the US and they need to understand what's in that spreadsheet. I am never going to send that spreadsheet for translation. I'm not taking translation, you know, from any vendor, because no one would ever translate that, because that spreadsheet shows up 3 times a day or 5 times a week.
Yeah.
Right. And it changes all the time. And it's a bunch of numbers, but they need to understand the labels. So we have this copilot that it's available in-house in Teams. It's available to all users in the company, and they can basically load that spreadsheet into Copilot and say, translate from English or Japanese to English, and I want to know what this thing looks like in English. So within less than 3 minutes, they get an email on their box with the spreadsheet translated to English, right? So our contracts team has many contracts that they have to review back and forth, and they use this to understand the terms and conditions of contracts. We would never send them for translation. My IT team, my operations team, my facilities team, they don't have a budget. And so we
nor,
can use...
Nor will they ever. Nor do they need one or deserve one. You know, it's not high value stuff that would make sense to pay for translation.
Changes all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can use technologies like this to connect them with teams and allow them to just drag and drop a document and get the translation. But let's say that I don't do that, because if you don't have money, I don't want to talk to you. Right. So if come to me with a budget, otherwise I can't help you. Sorry.
Right.
So what happens is they start to copy and paste those things into Gemini, into OpenAI. They start to copy into, you know, all kinds of translation engines, or they might even go to a friend and say, hey, can you help me translate this document? So the last thing we want is to have our content spread across people in platforms that, you know, we're not meant to view. So there is governance and there is, you know, policies around this that we can tie things together and create like a single entry point for anybody who wants to translate something. You don't have money, you get machine translation. We'll pay for it. No problem. You have money, we allow them to choose their cost center, and the document goes straight into our TMS.
Yeah.
Right.
Because
then we can kind of take it from there.
Because ultimately, people have needs. Your stakeholders have needs, and if you're not addressing those needs, they're going to go elsewhere. And that's how you get these spider webs of org charts and processes and stuff. And that's how you end up with 20 different localization vendors for one company. And no one knows what's going on. You know, what's a translation memory? I don't know, but I needed this translated, so I sent it to this company. Right. So better to provide any solution, even if they don't have the budget. Right. You need to be able to provide a solution to them.
Yeah. These things happen. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go to the comments here. The chat, Sriram, makes some good points and asks a question here. It says, by 2025 to 2026, AI and agentic solutions will ironically boost demand for human translation and localization. As AI takes care of routine tasks, human professionals will concentrate on subtle cultural adaptation, context-dependent translations, and quality assurance, boosting overall output quality. Agentic workflows require human oversight for bias mitigation, compliance audits, and transcreation of brand-specific metaphors. Would you say the role of human translators will evolve to complement AI and agentic solutions in the translation industry by 2025 to 2026?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, let's talk about hyperlocalization or personalization. Yeah.
Well, and so, I see, just before you go off here, I my brain breaks this up into two questions. Like, would you say that the role of translators is going to change? And then do you think that's going to happen this year and next year? Is it, like, what's the timeline for it? So you say yes.
Well, you know, I mean, the industry is like, you know, it's multi-speed, right? Sure, some companies will start definitely do that. Other companies will take a little longer. Right. But, you know, maybe a couple of years, 3 years, we'll kind of 60% of the industry will gravitate towards the new role. So let's say hyper, you know, localization or personalization. So that's a feature within marketing, right? So let's say that you want to talk to people in the US and English is just a language, or you want to talk to people in any country that has different dialects. So if you're going to generate a marketing campaign today, you generate a marketing campaign kind of for the whole country. Not many companies can do it in a per locale, like per sub-locale. But if you have the ability to generate a campaign plan that allows you to create assets for the campaign across countries, and address the localities of each country. So let's say if I can have a video that talks like, you know, in Texas with the dialect from Texas, and different than from California, different from New York, different from Tennessee, right? I will be speaking, I will be touching the people in a more effective way, because communication is about emotions, right? So if I'm using the right words regionally, I will be more effective than if I have a neutral language. Now, who can hire a QA for each state of the United States? Right. No one, right? So instead of having a translator and a reviewer for each state, you're going to have to scale to have someone who is in the loop, who is going to help you make decisions about what's right and what's wrong. And so that's where the role goes from being just a linguist who is almost like a machine, checking segment by segment by segment, is maybe someone who is looking at, is this content appropriate for this type of audience? And you can do this per country, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, that's the role of the translator. We're going to be seeing that more and more, is rather than, hey, translate this Word doc, it's going to be, hey, review this Word doc that's already been translated and fine-tune it, right? And that's been met, that could be met with fear of, you know, oh, my job of translating content is over and it's taking my job. Or it could be met with excitement, which is, okay, actually translating every single word was one of the least interesting parts of my job. What I really love doing is geeking out on the cultural nuances. And that's what I get to spend more time on now. Because I know translators that are paid by the word, you know, the quicker they translate, the more money that they can make, the more profitable they are. And they don't have time to geek out on cultural new stuff.
No. Yeah, there's no lack of content.
Yeah, no.
I guarantee you that.
It's coming. Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about, kind of shifting gears a little bit, is we talk about how AI is going to increase scalability, make it possible to be translating stuff that before there just wasn't a use case for, there wasn't budget for, it just wasn't feasible to do. But I think a lot of the conversations that we have around AI, we're kind of talking about it as if it's this magic wand, this free tool that you can just throw stuff into. There's a cost to it, and there's a cost structure to it. The challenge is the cost structure, you know, it's token based. What the heck is a token? Right. What does that mean? How many words do I get for a token? Right. So the cost is more challenging to understand and to comprehend. And to me, that's kind of a risk. Like, if I wanted to build a program around AI, like, it's a big risk, because what if the cost structure changes tomorrow? Tech is notorious for doing this. You know, in the initial phases, the early adopter phases, these companies aren't supposed, they're not expected to make a profit. And then all of a sudden they have an IPO and, oh, shoot, now we have to make a profit. So up goes the prices. Right. So talk to me a little bit about the cost of AI. How is it charged? Do you feel that the model that we have currently is going to stick around? And how do you see that shifting for in the future?
No, terrific question. And I think I would add to that and say that maybe certain governments might prevent you from using a certain AI.
That too. Yeah. That
So, I
too.
mean, you're building everything for AI, and then all of a sudden they say, you can't use this one, right? You're out,
Looking at you, Europe.
back to empty. So actually, you need to have a mitigation plan for dealing with this. So I think my answer to that is, to when you build the architecture for these solutions, it's important to kind of bake into the whole process, monitoring and auditing, right? And you want to make sure the answers are correct and this thing is working well, but you also want to make sure that you're getting you're spending the money wisely, and then attach that to dynamic workflows. So one of the next phases that AI is going to do together with agentic process solutions is to have like features that allow you to fork decisions or fork processes or merge processes. So I think the answer to this is not as simple, but maybe AI is more expensive depending how you use it, and you're going to find ways to use it more wisely. So instead of saying review 50,000 documents, find the 20% of these documents that I should be reviewing, and instead of running everything, just look at 20% and help me, optimize the output so that I have, 80% of my content is being done with 20% less spent. So a lot of dynamic workflows, intelligent, decisioning in the process, but coupled with very, very close tracking of costs. So I agree with you. AI can be very expensive, and at some point in time, it might not be available. It might go down. You never know. So you need to be able to have dynamic workflows to address this these situations. And technology is deflationary. So yes, the cost may go up, but in general, historically, technology goes down. So this would be like you used to go around with horses and you got a car and you say, hey, car is going to be more expensive,
Yeah,
but
but
then
keep
you can go
feeding
from
your
here to New
horse.
York.
Keep feeding your horse until that car.
So I think it's going to go in the lines of that. Yeah, you can get a lot more out of AI if you know how to use it, but it can be expensive if you're not, applying it correctly.
Yeah. And that kind of aligns with what the advice that I've been giving people when they come and ask me. And my advice, if you're asking me for advice on AI, my advice is don't ask me for advice. Ask one of our qualified experts here at NIMSY Insights. So we got people that are researching this and consulting on this. That's what they do. And they are in high demand right now, let me tell you that much. But my advice is, my stock advice has typically been like, now's the time to be experimenting. Now's the time to be prototyping. Now's the time to be testing to see what AI can do for you, how it can affect different workflows. Now's not the time to be completely building your entire system reliant upon AI because there are too many unknowns out there. And you bring up a really good point, which is that governments, regulatory bodies, whether it's government or otherwise, regulatory bodies are notoriously slow, at least much slower than the pace of innovation. And so it's going to take a few years for legislative and regulatory bodies to catch up with what's going on with AI and start implementing these rules. And when they do, how is that going to affect everything that we've built? Is it going to completely screw us up? And that's the question. I think it's a valid not a fear, but it's a valid concern that needs to be on your radar if you're implementing solutions.
Yeah. I mean, I always think also about whether we're going to converge into one solution worldwide, whether you're going to have a few companies that will basically control access to these technologies, or whether we're going to break up into many, many segments because of regulations. So this is like, how is globalization going to evolve? Are we going to have new alliances and separate things, or are we going to reinforce this major platforms and make them global, right? So yeah, that's going to be, time will tell.
And so which horse am I going to bet on? Because I don't know which one's going to be the winner out there right now. And I stole this from my partner Renato. But he likes to remind people the companies, the biggest companies today that everyone wants to sell to, that everyone wants to work with, they did not exist 20 years ago.
That's right.
So 20 years from now, what are those companies going to be? We don't know because they don't exist yet. The biggest company of the next decade probably doesn't exist yet, right? I might be a little bit hyperbolic there, but the point remains is that we don't know what we don't know yet.
Yeah, we're facing, you know, dramatic changes to how we use money, financial systems, and digital solutions. We're looking at health and how governments operate. Everything, you know, is kind of changing, and there's a new world right in front of us. So, like you said, 20 years from now, I cannot even imagine which company is gonna, you know, is gonna be driving.
I like to think of it as like, you know, I'm the de facto tech support for my parents, right? Because they just don't understand the technology of today. So they call me on their landline and they ask me for tech support, right? And what I like, what keeps me up at night is 20, 30, 40 years from now, what will I be calling my kids to ask them about?
Right? Yeah, my parents, they ask me, what is a browser?
Yeah, exactly. I can't get the Google to work. Well, that's another story, and I hope my mom's not watching this. So I'm watching the clock here. I want to turn back to Automation Anywhere here. We talked about it a little bit earlier, but where can we find out more about Automation Anywhere? Tell us about the website. What's the website? How can we reach you? How can we find out more? All that stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, the easiest way, you know, if it's, you know, if an enterprise is looking for ways to kind of put a whole agentic process automation workflow to address process orchestration, like really complex challenges, like how do you measure success? How do you, you know, track all these agents? We have clients that have thousands of bots and automation. So, you know, that's what we do. We create this platform that enable, you know, large corporations or, you know, mid-sized to go to the next level. You can request a demo by pressing that button on the right, and it will be directed through, you know, either our marketing team or sales team to connect on solutions that might apply, you know, more specifically to your scenario or for overall, like an overview of what we can offer. And if anyone wants to connect with me and wants to discuss ideas, I'm always open. I'm always curious. I was talking to another company 2 days ago about, you know, how can we play with AI in some interesting way. You can email globalization@automationanywhere.com. And that comes to me, and I'd be happy to engage with anyone who has ideas or is looking for interesting solutions around our industry.
And who are those people that should be reaching out to you? What type of clients do you work with?
You know, in general, we're like we said, the alignment with the C-level, it's extremely important. So usually we're working with the C-level folks across multiple, you know, global enterprises and directors and VPs of globalization, you know, because you need to be able to, this is a whole program that, you know, has to kind of fit in the company and fit in with the vision. It impacts so many different departments. Yeah. So it is not something that you're going to say, you know, my team is going to do this automation and we're going to bring in agentic solutions and only my team will use it. It's just, it'll take the whole village,
which is something. Yeah. If I'm a executive, if I'm a senior level person, that's something that I'd be very concerned about, because referencing our previous conversation, if my people aren't, if I'm not providing the solutions to my teams that they need and that they're asking for, then they're going to go find their own solutions, right? And 2 years from now, I'm going to end up with this mess where everyone has their own AI solution. None of those things are talking to each other. Everything's a mess. You know, it's turf wars. You know, my system's better than your system. So if I'm an executive, I'd want to be on top of this, and I'd want to make sure that as a company, we have a strategy around this and that everyone's bought into and following the strategy.
Yeah, you know, I mean, another way to start is we have like a free training camp for automation process solutions coming up on April. It's on our website. Anybody can sign up and view the courses.
Nice.
So that kind of can educate you, like, as far as like how do I get started with agentic solutions and how do I engage with my team members in different folks across different departments to make this a reality. We work with several partners to deliver solutions. We have 5,000 customers, very large customers. Chances are, if you're in a corporation, you know, you probably already have a license from Automation Anywhere to play around. So
nice.
That's something to consider.
Well, very cool. Well, Luciano, thank you so much for coming on, talking, geeking out with me about this. I learned a lot, so maybe I only need to ask 3 or 4 more times what an agentic solution is to the next 3 or 4 people. Catch me at the next conference and re-explain it to me.
Yes. Yeah, I'd love to see you again. I think I met you at in Monterey last time.
Yeah, I think so. I think that was it. Are you? Where are we going to be seeing you in the future? Anywhere people can come meet you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I might go into the Montreal.
Nice. Gala?
Gala, yeah. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm looking at that myself. I really want to go. I love Montreal. So, all right, sir. Well, I'm going to take us out here. Once again, thank you so much. Stick around and just talk to you right after the show, okay?
Likewise. Thanks, sir.
Yeah, ladies, gentlemen, chat, we are out of time for today. If you enjoyed this episode of NIMSY Live, then join us next time on April 2nd when we are discussing why raw MT output can ruin localization, featuring Alexander Murawski and Dennis Yulko. If you're not already signed up, make sure to sign up via LinkedIn events for this upcoming session. Once again, and finally, my name is Tucker Johnson, host of NIMSY Live, and it has been my pleasure to join you all today. I appreciate our guest, Luciano. I appreciate my colleagues here at NIMSY Insights doing all the hard work so I can have these interesting conversations. And I appreciate everybody in our industry and everybody in chat leaving these lots of interesting comments today. I like that. Not a lot of questions, but a lot of interesting comments. A very engaged chat, and I always like to see that. And I look forward to next time. Cheers.